We were talking about the crime in Chicago and what happened at that Perillo dealership on Rush Street with the high-end exotic cars. Dear John, crime is everywhere. Several cars stolen recently from a high-end Southwest Suburban dealership. They put a guard there the next day, and a gun was pulled on him, and criminals took another car. I think we need the military to help patrol everywhere. I don't know what the solution is. All I say, I get frustrated with everybody who points to the problems, but they don't have solutions. If you want to be the mayor or governor, be critical of the current mayor and governor. I understand. I just am anxious to hear something more concrete than jail everybody. And don't ask me what it is. I'm not running. But I would like to see something a little more innovative than that. Maybe that's the only thing we'll have. And 630 said, John, why do you hate squirrels? I don't hate squirrels. The squirrels are eating the bird seed out of our bird seed feeder, and I'm not sure that bothers me. But it did bother the cat, the other squirrel, and the birds that were trying to get into that bird feeder yesterday.
John, you need more wildlife in your backyard. In our yard, we've got a pair of foxes who are making the rounds, a coyote who wanders around as if he lives here,
wow,
you know, and hangs out. We've got a family of skunks, and I actually only have seen one squirrel in the last 6 months.
And this is in her condo downtown, by the way. The city is out of control. No, I'm teasing about that. So do you put food out for them?
I don't think we should. I think it sounds to me like most of the animals have enough by eating all the other ones that are running around here. And I wouldn't know what to put out. We used to put out bird seed, but the thing that we actually do every year for the birds is we put out flowering plants, hanging baskets, and what we get are beautiful hummingbirds. So we do that.
And you really can't find good skunk feed anymore. I was at the Farm Fleet, and they just didn't have a section for that. Talk to me about the 10 richest men in the world and what's happened to their fortunes.
Well, it's gone up, John. I mean, not surprisingly, right? Anybody who's had stock has seen an incredible rise. And of course, the S&P 500 has done even better, largely because the companies that these men own are responsible for that growth. Tesla, Elon Musk, is worth $268 to $300 billion. He's crazy wealthy. Jeff Bezos, worth almost $200 billion. We have the chief executive officer, Bernard Arnault, and his family. They're the ones who own things like Louis Vuitton, $187 billion. Bill Gates, still worth $134 billion. I don't know how much Melinda took with her when she divorced him, but still a significant amount. And then, of course, Larry Ellison, Oracle co-founder, he's worth about $120 billion. And so if you just add up how much these men had, they had about $700 billion prior to the pandemic. And Oxfam International says that they are now worth $1.5 trillion. And to put that into some perspective for you, that amount is more than the 3.1 billion poorest people on this planet. So about half of the planet. These men have more money than all of them. And if you liquidated their fortunes, you could pay off everybody's student loan debt.
And buy them a new car.
But, maybe true.
You know, that sounds offensive to me. I'm not sure what to do about it, but Oxfam says, okay, we should have a billionaire tax. Did they say what rate it should be? Should it be 90% of their money? And by the way, if we do that, the consequences will be more than we get their money. There'll be a negative trickle down, some economists tell me. But what about that?
I don't think they give you a particular, you know, number that we should tax it at. And one of the problems is, and this billionaire tax has come up, it comes up in all of the presidential elections. It's come up, just anytime anybody's looking for more revenue. And, you know, part of the problem is that a lot of this wealth is distributed around the world. And so taxing the wealth, you know, these numbers come from Forbes and Fortune and places like that. They're not, you know, it's not like the IRS just has a list and they keep it on a whiteboard. And so we have to figure out, you know, where that's going to come from and how you're going to do it. But even if you said, you know, anybody who's on the billionaires list, we're taking an extra 10%. It would be a significant amount of money, and if you redirected it into the right places, maybe it would help change some of the dynamics that many cities across the country are facing today.
There's also a gap in credit access to credit. And there's also some money and credit resolutions that you wrote about the other day. I want to talk to you about all of this. Elise Glink is on the line. I'm John Williams. Elise Glink, the financial wellness and real estate experts on the line. Not talking too much real estate, at least so far this afternoon, but talking about the wealth that some people have. And now let's talk about the income gap. There's another story out about that. What are you looking at?
Well, one of the things that I'm looking at is a new study from Zillow. And they were looking at the gap in mortgage denial rates between Black and white Americans. It seems appropriate to talk about this today because, with obviously it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. But, you know, the pandemic, when we look back at sort of how people were hurt, we see that Black and brown families were hurt a lot worse than white families. And Black women in particular have been hurt. When you look at it from a real estate perspective, you think, oh, well, the real estate market's just been on fire. True, but Black Americans were denied mortgages 84% of the time more than whites. So this was back in 2020. So we had about most of the year was, you know, the early pandemic crazed. And Zillow, you know, took a look at the HMDA data. That's the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act. It's collected by the federal government. If you've ever done a mortgage or a refi, you have to fill out and check, you know, what your race is, and you have to, you know, check some other things. And that data is sort of collected so that they can analyze whether everybody's getting a fair shake. And so, you know, in 2019, we saw that Black applicants were denied 74% more often than white applicants for credit, but that rose 10 points. So it was 84% higher for Black applicants in 2020. And regionally, denial rates were higher than in the South. And the worst place, if you were trying to get a mortgage and you were Black, was actually in Mississippi.
Well, we know that incomes are lower and unemployment is higher in minorities, so it almost seems logical. It's a downward spiral, but that banks would be less inclined to lend them money for homes. It doesn't make the banks biased. It just means they're making decisions based on the ability to pay back the loans, right?
Well, sort of. Yes, I suppose in some ways that's true, but in other ways it's a little bit confounding why. You know, if Black people have jobs and white people have jobs and they're, you know, ostensibly going for property that they can afford, you know, why they are rejected so much more often than their white counterparts, right? It doesn't really make a lot of sense. And people who are a lot smarter than me and do the research here, you know, have talked about, you know, why this happens. And for Black applicants, the most common reason that was recorded is that they had poor or insufficient credit history. And there are a lot of people who are Black and brown who just simply don't understand how credit works, just like there are a lot of white people. But there just seems to be a preponderance of Black and brown people who get rejected. And I think that this is, when we look, take a step back and we look at Black households, research has shown that, you know, again, Black households have experienced a more substantial financial impact from the pandemic than their peers. And they're more likely, true, to have experienced a job or income loss, but they're also more likely to be behind on mortgage and rental payments. And so, these are just, you know, challenges that I think people in the housing industry are very interested in addressing as more and more people want to buy a house. In fact, LendingTree found in their study this week that 40% of Americans, all Americans, are looking to move, and a substantial number of those want to buy a home.
You can see how the problem compounds itself, can't you? That if you have a bad credit history, or maybe just you haven't established enough credit to get the loan, then you don't get the home, then you never build up the equity. And so it's sort of a downward spiral that's hard to reverse.
It is. And really, you know, when you think about generational wealth, one of the ways that families of all colors build generational wealth is home ownership. And we see a lot of stories about how, oh, well, you know, if you just rent and then you invest the difference, blah, 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 you'll be just as better off or whatever. But it isn't true. What happens when you buy a home, the earlier you buy a home, the wealthier you'll be later in life. And if you stay in that house and you pay off your mortgage, every single payment includes forced savings, right? A piece of it goes to pay down the amount that you owe, and you just continue to make those payments, and pretty soon the house is paid off, and you've got this big asset that you can depend on. And for a lot of people, the house is the thing they pass down to, or the money, the value of the house is what they pass down to the next generation. And so generation after generation of building wealth through home ownership is one reason why white families tend to have 10 times the amount of assets that black and brown families have. And that's substantial. And a lot of that comes from generations of investing in yourself and in investing in home ownership. And so increasing the amount of black home ownership is a really important thing to do, not just for those families, but for their neighborhoods and for the cities that we live in.
Rents are pretty high these days, too. Talk about money and credit resolutions. You posted about this for 2022. What's your thinking today?
Well, you know, I think that it's funny. You know, every year I do these New Year's resolutions, and you can find them all at thinklink.com. You know, for people who are buying this year, for people who are selling. And this year I took a look at money and credit and what people, you know, should be doing or should be thinking about. And one of the great things about the pandemic is that the federal government stepped up. If you had to go home, there was money that just kind of got deposited in your bank account. A lot of people paid down their debt. That was really great to see. Or they banked the pandemic cash. That was great to see. And we all realized that we could spend a whole lot less and save a whole lot more. And so my first two resolutions for the year, you know, my suggestions to you are continue to do that. Spend less, save more, and put that money away for something really important, either to buy a house, you've got your down payment, or maybe it's your retirement. But, you know, the third resolution that I wanted people to really think about this year, John, is to craft a challenging financial goal. I want you to push yourself a little bit this year. And I want you to do it in service of whatever it is, the goal that you have, right? So maybe it's to retire at 55 instead of 67, or maybe it is to take a big trip somewhere special this year now that you haven't been able to do that. Or maybe you want to pay off a debt for a child. Whatever your goal is, I just want you to challenge yourself to save a little extra in that 401k. If you're already saving, try to max it. If you're saving 3%, change that to 6%. If you're saving 10%, go even higher. And just feel that you have the power to do that this year.
Pay down your debt, pay down your debt, pay down your debt.
It's a really nice way to feel free. And right now, I think everybody just wants to feel a little bit free and a little bit less stressed about things. Getting rid of money stress is one way to do that.
A couple minutes here. Just talk to me about your home seller resolutions. You posted that about a week ago. I suppose it's good to visit these.
Well, certainly. You know, one of the things that, you know, sellers have just had an incredible run the last couple of years, right? I mean, your house is worth more than it was a long time ago. Most people, I should say. Even in Chicago, though, if you compare it to the other places, while we're behind in a home price appreciation, we're certainly seeing homes sell quickly. We're seeing them sell close to or above list price. And the way to make that happen is, of course, to decide that you're going to price your home correctly. And so the, you know, pie in the sky pricing might work in Boise, Idaho, but it isn't going to work here. So figure out what your home is really worth, price it right at that number, and you'll see people line up. There's just a huge amount of demand. Supply is down 28%, according to some At Properties numbers, the data that I saw over the last weekend. And that means that people are out there looking and there isn't a lot to buy. So if you want to sell, price your home correctly, make your home stand out and look gorgeous, and decide in advance what is the minimum acceptable price you're willing to take for that house and then stick to it.
1 minute left, but let's jump to you quoted Houzz, H-O-U-Z-Z, and they said, here are the things that people value in kitchens. Is that right?
Yeah, it's their annual kitchen trends report. And so people are prioritizing countertops in their kitchens, right? So they're picking engineered quartz and granite. They're giving the high appliances are turning into high-tech things. They're all, I don't know, Wi-Fi enabled. You can, I think, now talk to Alexa, and Alexa will tell your refrigerator, or maybe the refrigerator tells Alexa what you need from the grocery store. Stuff like that just feels very George Jetson. And then colors, we're seeing everybody go back to natural wood. So everything's been really white in your kitchen for the last 4 or 5 years, and now they're starting to incorporate natural woods, natural stone, polished brass fixtures, and knobs. So we're bringing color back into the kitchen according to House.
H-O-U-Z-Z for that, and thinkglink.com for Elise Glink.
Yeah, and don't forget to tune in to my This Week in Wealth on Sunday. We're now number one on Sundays. It's 6:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast if you want to sleep in.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that. It's a good show with Tom Fortino and Elise Glink. That's The Week in Wealth, Sunday mornings, 6:30 to 7, before Sinatra. Make sure you got your mind right about your finances. And it's nice to talk to you, Elise.
Always, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Scott Frank and Steve Milford join us now. There's a new place in town that you might be interested in. It's called Double Clutch Brewing Company. And let's put both of our guests on the phone line. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, John. Thanks for having us.
Good.
Afternoon.
Let's start with you, Steve Milford. You're the general manager. So tell me a little bit about Double Clutch Brewing Company, and what does the name mean?
Well, it's a car reference. So if you've ever had a stick shift, you might understand it. And we also have a car collection here at the brewery. And so it kind of ties in with our theme.
What kind of cars?
More than you can count.
Really?
Currently, we have a Christmas display, which includes six red Ferraris, which are in the middle of which is a 1960s Porsche 356 in dark green. So it suits the Christmas decor.
Oh, I get it. So then people go there, drink, and check out the cars? Is that the idea?
Yes, drink and check out the cars, no driving them.
But if I had a nice car like that, I don't know if I'd want a bunch of people drinking around them. Yeah, it's an event space, but it's also, is it a brew pub? Is that what it is?
A brewery, brew pub, and event space.
So I could go there without having to be at an event per se. I could come by a beer, right?
Yeah, we're open for lunch every day at noon, 11 o'clock on the weekends for brunch.
Talk to me about the food, then we'll talk about the beer. So what do I eat when I'm there, Steve?
Everything. We prefer if you eat everything. So you drink more beer. We have a typical pub fare, but it's all homemade. And we have some pretty unique twist on things. One of our most popular things are buffalo bites that are pretty addictive.
This is in Evanston. How long have you guys been open?
Well, since October 29th. Our initial plan was to open Memorial Day of 2020. That didn't quite happen because of a pandemic. And so we finally were allowed to open, or were able to open this past year, actually. I guess we're in a new calendar year. October 29th. So we've only got a couple complete months under our belt.
What kind of beer do y'all brew? What's the specialty? What do folks know you for?
German lagers. So I'm extremely passionate about the lagers and ales of Germany, but of continental Europe. So Germany, Czech Republic, Poland, and Austria. And so our Helles Lager is our best seller right now. But our latest beer to come out is a Rauch Helles, which means smoke in German. We also have a Schwarz beer, which is a black lager, and Kolsch and alt beer. We even though we've branched out and did a hazy IPA because we know the kids love it.
Yeah. Don't you hate that? But someone's going to ask for it, so give them the damn thing, right?
Yeah, well, they did ask again and again.
Yeah. But Lord knows there's a taste for these kinds of beers too, which are a little less alcohol by volume too, right?
That is absolutely correct. I like beers that are in the 4.5 to 5.5 alcohol by volume range because I can have more of them without it. So I enjoy that. So you can come in and try several beers and get up the next morning and come back and do it all over again.
Do I have brats there as well? Do I have potato salad? Is the menu feature German foods as well, Steve?
We do have some German. We do have a great brat, beer brat, and then we also have a schnitzel on our brunch menu. But like I said, it's all over the place. It's just good pub food, you know, and it's all homemade. Good pretzel.
You mentioned, great. Yeah, boy, that sounds good too. I hate this part of the show because we always do it at lunchtime where we feature a restaurant or place in town, and it sounds really good, guys. But back to the cars for just a second then. So do you rotate automobiles out? Is this a personal collection of somebody, Steve? Whose cars are those?
Well, it is. It is a personal collection, and it's a very large collection. We do rotate them out. Like I mentioned, with the holiday color theme, we will try to incorporate things, say, on the 4th of July, you might find all American cars. Possibly around Oktoberfest next fall, you'll find all German cars. So, yes, we will be rotating them out, and we will try to do themes.
And they're going to change this week. So if you want to see the Ferraris, you should get in here quick.
Yeah. Then I'm trying to think of what the next car appropriate theme would be. I mean, St. Patrick's Day is around the corner, but I don't know. Do you have some... What have you got for, what's the next theme going to be you're going to feature, guys?
This decision-making process requires a team. We are not capable of doing these decisions on our own. Yes. So I don't know. There will be some magic there, but we haven't quite yet decided.
I like the idea, though. I mean, this really sounds like a unique venue. It sounds fun because anybody can sit at a cool bar, but if you've got some cool cars, I think that just doubles the fun. One last thing, guys, then you're checking for vax passes at the door or at the table, is that right?
We do it at the door, and then we do it for even events and stuff like that, but yes.
The name of the brewery is Double Clutch Brewing Company. Double Clutch Brewing Company. Scott Frank is the head brewer. Steve Milford is the general manager. It's in Evanston. DoubleClutchBrewing.com is the website. Oh, you'll see me sometimes, guys. It sounds terrific. Good luck to you.
Please say hi. We'll buy you a beer.
Yeah, thank you so much, John, for having us on.
Yeah, good luck. It's 12:44 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Several big Chicago retailers have shortened hours because of staff shortages and safety issues related to COVID-19. Walgreens has shortened store hours and closed some pharmacy sections of their stores. Crain's reports about 1% of Walgreens locations have been impacted. Bolingbrook-based Ulta Beauty locations have also altered hours through February. A Chicago startup that helps hospitals recruit staff has raised a new chunk of cash in a Series A2 round of funding. AM Opportunities raised $2 million back in December, bringing its total venture funding to $9 million since launching in 2013. Chicago Inno says investors in the round include Chicago's OCA Ventures, Pace Healthcare, and Dream It Ventures. AM Opportunities raised more than $5 million earlier in 2021. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's also time for the business of food, this time with Justin Kolar.
We've come a long way from the days of spreading seed by hand. Purdue is taking farm fields to the future, bringing seeds to the skies with the help of drone technology.
I think this thing is absolutely amazing.
In a business built on the ground, the future of farming's looking onward and upward.
This is just the next step. We have digital agriculture where we're mapping everything, we're tracking every acre.
With drones.
I was instantly hooked.
Precision ag educator with Purdue University's Mark Carter puts these drones to the test.
We use it for spreading seeds, use it for spraying pesticides, herbicides. We can do it in a very precise manner. It's very controlled.
Remote controlled.
It's right there at your fingertips.
With the help of this 8-propped implement, farmers can plot their fields, plant greater yields, or get a look from above only a crow could see.
Real-time information can let you know if you have issues emerging, whether it's disease or insects or weeds.
Or more recently, floods.
You can see it from up high, and you don't have to have a bunch of fancy software. All you got to do is just fly up, take a look, and see what's there.
What's there right now is wet. Tractors don't help much when cover crops must be sown today.
couldn't get in there with a tractor and a drill to plant the traditional equipment, but yet we were able to do that with the drone.
It's like flight school for farmers. And the folks at Purdue are bringing it to them.
So a lot of the farmers don't have to go to the expense of doing all that testing, because sometimes things work, sometimes they don't.
In farmland, Justin Kolar.
The Wintrust Business Lunch. Amy Guth joins us on Mondays, and this Monday, it's tough traveling out east, huh, Amy?
Yeah, that's exactly right. As we watch that winter storm move through the Midwest and kind of just a little bit south of us hitting the East Coast over the weekend, it really created a lot of issues. So on Sunday, about 3,000 flights were canceled, according to flight tracking site FlightAware. And then on Monday, so far about 1,200 flights. So some of those were preempted, some of those were delayed. Mostly it is about, it's really kind of centering around the hub of Charlotte. Anybody who's flying around the East Coast often knows you probably have to go through Atlanta or Charlotte usually. So really the impact of Charlotte has sent this kind of ripple effect. The airports in D.C., that's kind of the second most affected area. But really, Charlotte has really sent a lot of issues throughout all of it. United, of course, based here, they canceled about 82 flights, JetBlue 49, Delta 37, Southwest 72, you know, American really canceled quite a few of them just because that, you know, they have so many hub routes right there in that area. But it's really impacting everybody. And that's on the heels of, it's already been such a rough time, even, you know, from Thanksgiving on, it's been a really rough time with weather, with Omicron, scheduling issues, labor issues that have just really badly impacted the airlines coming off of the last 2 years.
Yeah, the weather issues just make everything worse. The staffing issues have really been painful. And this is the second flight canceling storm they've had in the last couple of weeks. Right after the new year, we were talking about cars stranded on the highways out east.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, I feel like the airlines just keep getting wave after wave of things that really impact their revenue and impact their bottom line at a time when they are still trying to recover and they're still in recovery mode. And few airlines are really flying at full capacity. Most of them are still just a bit below capacity. Most of them are hovering kind of around that 89 to 90% capacity of what they were pre-pandemic. So at a time when revenue is already squeezed, you know, you see the storm go through and you know that's just another hit to their bottom line.
Talk about Peloton. They're in the news today.
Yeah, certainly. So so Peloton is changing some pricing a little bit. The delivery and setup fee for the bike and for the treadmill products, they're going to start being a thing. Previously, they had said that the $250 and $350 fees for delivery and assembly were included in the total price. Now, for delivery and setup of the bike, there's an extra $250. The fee is not included, and $350 for the treadmill. There's a banner across their website, so that would make these products. The bike would be $1,745, and the treadmill $2,845. There are similar banners on the website versions for the UK, Germany, and Australia. Their CMO and head of communications, she said, this is really about supply chain issues. They feel like those fees are, they're calling it middle of the road. They're pointing to other companies that have also raised their prices recently, and they're calling this kind of taking the middle. So they're not necessarily jacking up the price of the product, but trying to generate more revenue right there in the delivery and setup part, and pointing to supply chain issues. So, you know, that's kind of connecting those dots in terms of, hey, it's harder to get the parts and then get those parts to you and get the product to you. So therefore, that's where they're going to, you know, try to recoup some of that revenue. But that's that's no small amount on an already pretty expensive piece of equipment. So
it's been an interesting ride, no pun intended, on Peloton. I mean,
right.
At first there was that novel cycling company with the creepy commercial at Christmas time a couple of years ago. Then they were stay-at-home stock that suddenly saw their price go up, 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 and you had to wait to get one. But then it came down, it kind of crashed of late, right?
Yeah, and don't forget they also had an issue with the treadmill because there was a safety issue think about the back of the treadmill, the safety stop, little children and pets were getting injured, and that kind of intake as the banner was rolling back up to the top. So they had kind of disabled some of those machines for a while and created a software fix. So they've had a couple of hits too.
And then the Sex and the City episode wasn't great for business either, now that I think about it. You'll get a chuckle out of this just looking at the next story. We were going through a box of old pictures over the weekend, and I found a Netflix DVD that I still have to return
for you better get on that.
For Mystic Pizza. So if they are having revenue issues, by the time I pay the fee and fine for this thing, it'll be millions of dollars and they'll be back in the black. Not that Netflix is suffering, but they are raising prices, right?
They are. And so CNN Business reported that, that they're going to raise prices in the U.S. and Canada. So it's based by plan. So if you have the standard plan, it's going up $1.50. So now it's $15.49. The basic plan went up $1. So now it's $9.99. And the premium plan is up $2 to $19.99. Similar pricing in Canada. The basic plan is going to stay the same in Canada, though. And a lot of this, and so a lot of people are writing about this morning, kind of speculating what this is. And so a lot of industry observers and tech journalists are that have been following streaming really have pointed to this being about how much they're investing in original content. The streaming wars are still very much a thing, and the more people enter that space, the smaller amount of growth that streaming companies can count on, because they've already kind of captured such a big part of the market. But they've been investing in original content. You know, Squid Game was such a huge win for them, and you know, all the streaming companies have been kind of moving into that space. So a lot of this is about that initial revenue to keep producing that original content, and that's where they're pointing to of where they're needing to invest more.
There's going to be a second season of Squid Game, right? Didn't they say they're going to make another round of that? Pretty sure.
Gosh, I hope.
Yeah,
I hope.
Producer Pete is shaking his head yes. And one last story here, hashtag Betty White challenges for what?
Yeah, so Betty White really devoted so much time in her life to helping animals and raising money for animal charities. And so it's unclear exactly who started this hashtag, but sometime shortly after her death on New Year's Eve, somebody created the hashtag Betty White Challenge and said, hey, let's all donate $5 to animal welfare charities on what would have been her 100th birthday, which is today. And so that is happening. We have to wait and see exactly how much is happening, but a couple of organizations have weighed in. The Best Friends Animal Society, based in Utah, said they've already raised $25,000 in donations made in her name. Some other, you know, organizations have weighed in saying that they're seeing big traffic spikes on their website, things like that. So we're probably gonna have to wait a couple days to see what the grand total is. But you know, what a lovely legacy, you know, that people are honoring Betty White in that way. And what would have been her 100th birthday?
We might be sending money to the Midwest Dachshund Rescue at my house now that you mentioned it. Sometimes we just need a little reminder or push, and that's a good idea. Okay, nice to talk to you. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.